You are listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth.
Good evening and welcome to Journeys with JP. It was Burns Week last week. It was Burns Night last week. It's now Burns Oregon this week. Everything's happening there. And in fact, yeah, David Fry, Burns. Is there something going on here? Are we talking stuff that's bad for the heart? Yeah, certainly. Lead's bad for the heart. Anyway, so, I don't know if anybody's listening. If anybody cares, good evening. Stick your hands up in the chat room. I'd like to take calls. Anything but Burns. Unless it's Rabbi Burns, the famous Kabbalist. No. You could call in to the Wolf Spirit number. You could call in to the Revolution Radio number. Hello, Harry. Right. So indeed, yeah. Harry and I are available. All right, let's have a quick roundy. Let's bring in Harry. Where's Harry? It's taking a little while to join everybody together, but let's see. Let's see if anybody's here yet. Nobody's picked up the phone. There we go. Rob from New Mexico. Melbourne. Did I hear that right, Matt Harry?
Correct, Undo. Hang on a minute. I'm just going to turn something down.
Good. Don't turn me down, though. You'll never hear me again. Anyway, it's lovely to have you all. And hi, how are you doing, Rob? You can unmute your mic now. Rob, unmute your mic or plug the mic in. Pick the mic up from the floor. Pick up your headphones and your headset. Take the plug out, put it in the other socket, plug it back in.
Microphone headphone dance.
Was I right? Was it the socket thing?
I put my headset out, I put my mic fold in, and then I shook it all about.
That's right. I could sense that, you know, there's a certain amount of time that people take to respond, right? And there's, you know, that certain amount of, you know, the amount of time that you were delayed was exactly the sort of time that is exactly the kind of time that it takes to take the plug out, turn it, you know, do, what did you call it, the headphone hokey-cokey. So,
if I could just say, your intuition was 100% correct.
It's just experience. It's just experience, man. It's just experience. You know, it's like you know how long somebody would take. You know, and you know how
it's your third eye, man.
It's my fourth eye. It's my fourth eye, and I've got eyeshadow on it. It's lovely, don't you think? He fluttered his fourth eye. Well, here we are. Yeah. Meanwhile, in the middle of the shift, people are having to choose, aren't they? Tell us about what you think the choices available to humanity right at this moment are. What do you think are the biggest choices that are facing people in this moment that we're experiencing? Because this is a really important moment, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It really is a choice, a personal choice. It's an individual choice, and it's whether you've done the groundwork or not. A lot of people are at different stages, and that's what I'm seeing. But if I'm talking for myself, my choice is to live my dreams, and that's what I'm choosing to do. I'm planning on going to Southeast Asia, and I'm directed towards the Philippines because Ferdinand Marcos Jr. is actually trying to push through Senate there to run the whole country on hydrogen energy. So, and from all the work I've been doing over the last few years, that to me lines up entirely with what we fabricate our lives to be. Something I learnt from working from corporate life is you make a plan and then you work your plan. You write your plan down, project, anything, vision board if you're going to call it that, art, any expression that you allow to cast a spell, a spelling, a writing, an essay, anything out there into the world with intent, not just for amuse, you know, for having it, taking a laugh or anything, but if you're using it as a tool to direct your life, you can do that. The Wiccans have that Book of Shadows, I think it's called, or something, where you write your thoughts and your spells and things like that down in that. You know, corporate, government, corporation have a whiteboard. They do so, and then they have reams and reams and reams of information that people maybe don't completely understand but follow.
So beautiful thought direction. Beautiful thought direction. Would you agree, JP, the proactivity that Harry's talking about? That's third eye. That's fourth eye. That's moving forward. That's not getting stirred up in the soup, you know.
Exactly. It's stepping out of the soup and getting the ladle.
Yeah.
It's acting on a different level. It's the way out. You know, it's the very famous quote from Einstein said, you can't fix a problem that with the same thinking that got you into the trouble in the first place. And in a way, if you think about it, life allows us to create ourselves problems in order that we find a solution. And it's the, ooh, thank you. And it's the solution that is the thing that takes us out of the thinking that we were stuck in that caused us to make the problem. And so as we refine our thinking by going through this process, that's how we evolve. But we can't, you know, it's like you can't make an omelette without breaking eggs. This is the same situation. You know, these are eggs that will be broken because you have to destroy, and I'm not talking about people, I'm talking about ideas. You have to crack through people's staunch ideas, and some people can hold ideas more preciously than they can hold family members. Thoughts?
Yes, I think what happens is, you're talking about the egg cracking, everyone has to be, I've been broken. You know, I've had my life turned upside down, and that's what has really spurred me on, just to be me, you know.
Exactly.
Let everything else go, including my children, and be me. I've had my heart, you know, ripped apart and mutilated, basically. But
so you got to see that. That's not really, I mean, that's looking at it from one stance. But from another point of view, from the point of view of your own soul, it's what you had to do in order to get you to the place where you can be receptive to the instruction of your soul, correct?
Yeah, well, that's right. And the thing is, you've got to learn to make no compromise. It's, there's time is for no compromise, because we are so accommodating on other people's ideologies or dreams or visions, or we subjugate ours to theirs. We let down our stride to walk at their pace, you know. And that's something I've learned through my personal experiences, that, you know, I've allowed those things to distract me or compliment me for a while, let's put it that way. And then I've been released to continue on. So, you know, that's the way I look at it. And it's been and I've really enjoyed, you know, despite the things that break you, the reshaping of a person, or the reshaping of a, you know, of a vision, or a, you know, or rekindling it, is what it is, was what it's all about, you know. And
choice.
If it wasn't for those things happening, I wouldn't have looked into why the judicial system is so corrupt. I wouldn't have looked into so much, you know. I mean, I remember hearing about the pedophile rings and all those sort of things, but when you're living a life as a family, all you're doing is telling children not to talk to strangers, you know. So, but when you find out that the people who decide in the courts, who make the decisions, the judges and the police and all the authorities, the mayors and the, all part of, well, not all of them, I'm not whitewashing anybody here, but the power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And unless it's a shared energy source of power across everybody, there are always going to be people who will try to it's funneled at the moment. There's no shared understanding, and this is what I think we're coming to at this great transition point on the planet again.
Rob?
Yeah, well, you know, it's the choice and where we go, and, you know, proactive thought process and what we've learned in our past, and, you know, what we can do to make a better future is real important, you know. And as we, you know, I don't want to say compartmentalize, but more say refocus, rethink, redirect, you know, we get our energy going in the right spiral. And it's this acknowledgement that I think we have. And, you know, as you said earlier, postulating, JP, we're at this point now where we do have this choice, you know. We choose. It's not like someone is choosing for us. And that's something I think we need to be responsible for as individuals and do the work. Like Carrie said, you know, do the work.
The work. And the work, really, is the work within ourselves to stop ourselves being triggered by deprogramming ourselves.
Yes. Yes. The awareness. Right on.
Well, you know, yes. And the deprogramming is, you know, people say, oh, you know, I just got an automatic reaction. It's my conditioning. You know, I think this. Oh, it's my conditioning. Oh, I was brought up like this. Da, 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 da. Yeah, exactly. That's your programming. And if anybody says, oh, I haven't got programming, you can hear that, like, all the rest of those excuses that I said a minute ago, they'll also say those as well. Because they're so programmed, they think they're unprogrammable.
Frequency, too, right?
Everything.
Frequency
programming. Everything is all about frequency. I mean, for instance, when you're watching a movie, and, you know, the whole tension is building up, and they know how to build up the tension, you know, they use sound to build up tension as well. And it's just that you can, you know it's coming, and it's like that little tingle that you know will precede a great flood of tears. But it's that little violin that's very quiet, comes in the background, and you know, like, you can feel your tears welling up. That frequency is just sparked off your tear gland, right? And you can feel that little tingling, and you know, oh my God, I'm going to cry. Oh, quick. Make sure no one's looking. Or, you know, if you're happy about it, you turn on the lights. Think, look, I'm crying. I'm such a man. I'm such a modern man. Anyway, so...
Or you laugh at getting sucked into a movie.
Yeah. But that's... so we get... We're needing, at this moment, to rise above the understanding or the lack of understanding of what is going on. You see what I'm saying? Like, if we here... Hang on. We here at Revolution Radio, we have an understanding of what's really going on. We know that the government is corrupt. We know why the government is corrupt. We know the nature of the corruption, we think, actually. We think part of it is to do with money, part of it's to do with oil, but it's also to do with human trafficking, and sacrifice, and all sorts of weirdness that you have no idea what's going on. I mean, one phrase that I use is that, you know, whatever we produce, they've got a vacuum cleaner that will suck it off and sell it somewhere. You know, no question. Everything that human beings do is like gold to the rest of the galaxy, and they, you know, I don't want to go into it, but it's there are so many dimensions to what is going on. It's really, really, really parasitic. That's what it is. It's like It's it like is. If the you know they've almost turned the planet into a kind of robot tick that sucks us. Cleans us dry. That's the Matrix. You know, you look at the Matrix and they see, you know, these people stuck in little tubes and little glass tanks. And essentially, that's what the metaphor is. But it's on the inside. The tanks are on the inside of us. We have, and they're psychic. They're not in our range of limited range of measurement, because our limited range of measurement has been created that way.
Yeah, and what happens when a tick attaches to you?
It not only sucks your blood, it drills in, you to undo them anti-clockwise, so it drills in clockwise. But not only does it suck your blood, it also puts a thinner in your blood, which can be laden with bacteria that can be weaponized, and apparently Lyme disease is a weaponized bacteria, I've heard.
Bad nung.
Very bad nung.
Barry, do you know about the bad nung and the good nung?
No.
All right. So here's I'll just briefly do the nung thing, because actually, Rob, you've heard my nung rap long enough. What's nung about?
It's absolutely incredible.
Tell Harry what nung is.
Well, you know, if you think about it, nung is something, you know, we could take as an actual living creature, a biological being, what could we call it, like a parasite or that grows within us, and it's like a wheat, it's like a bread, it's like a yeast.
It's the yeast.
Yeah. And it seems to expand, and it works with kind of our desires and our voids, and it's like an addictive process that we have psychologically. It's a programming, like we were talking before, and this nung, it's like, you know, give us this day our daily nung. You know, it's a program, JP. Am I going in the right direction?
Well, let's just simplify it. All right. So, so Harry, have you ever made bread?
Yes.
You know what you do when you add the sugar and the yeast to water? What happens?
It ferments.
Yeah, and what happens?
It leavens the bread.
Yeah, but what does it do? I mean, when you look at it, what's it doing?
It's like bubbling.
Yeah, it gets bigger, right? It swells up. Was the correct answer. But anyway, you see what... So, here's the thing. When you've eaten it, it doesn't just go away. Because of the sharpness and eventual wearing out of our gut wall, because of the sharpness of wheat, it's very pointy. You see, like wheat is very pointy. You know, it scratches, and the yeast enter through these tiny scratches, and they go through the gut wall. Are you with me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, here's the thing. This is the nung bit. Okay. So. You know when you grow a cabbage? You ever grown a cabbage?
Mm-hmm.
You ever let the cabbage overgrow?
Mm-hmm.
Turns into a different plant, doesn't it?
Mm.
You know, cabbage is a whole different thing. It never grows a cabbage again. It's like, whoa, what's this? Yeah.
It's like that. Well, yeah, you can just pick the leaves.
Yeah, okay. So, likewise, when yeast, sort of, which is a seed sort of thing, when yeast starts to grow and colonize, it turns into something else, and it becomes more like a kind of coral, a colony, you know, and it has a little kind of minute consciousness, which is, you know, it's a survival oriented consciousness, which says it wants more, it creates an attraction for more of itself and for more of its food, which is sugar.
Mm.
You get me this far?
Feed me.
Yeah.
I am nung.
Yep. So, and as you move, as you build up more and more of this stuff, as you eat more and more yeast-based food, which leaks through the gut, you know, by this time, you're not aware that there's holes in your gut. You're not aware, but, you know, sometimes it might be a bit runny once or twice. But anyway, But essentially, there's holes, and it's not good. It's not good to have holes in your gut, because other things leach into your and it goes into your body, which is like between the organs.
Yeah, it's not natural.
Yeah,
it's not how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, isn't, you know, stuff, it's supposed to be a kind of nice fluid.
It makes you the blood sugar. Yeah,
exactly. So one sign of this in your body is that when you eat sugar a certain amount of time later, you get a headache, or your body bloats up. I have a friend, she can't eat something, I can't remember what it is, but as soon as she does it, it like this thing, and she swells up, and you know, other people, their tongue swells up. That's where it can get dangerous, you know, depending on where this stuff is sitting. When it swells up, that's when it gets dangerous, because, you know, it could block your airways, or it could block a blood vessel, and it may be, you know, that it may be blocking important things. So anyway, these little colonies eventually kind of crystallize, like a coral reef, you know, as it lives and dies and creates its stuff, it produces acid, and your body produces calcium in order to neutralize the acid. Where does the calcium come from? From your bones. Okay, so the more sugar you feed this thing, the more it leaches calcium from your bones, and eventually your bones will break, because you've got osteoporosis. Okay, because all this while you've been allowing your body to neutralize the sugar that you've been eating with the calcium from within your own bones. Now, it's very difficult to rebuild your bones using modern day materials, because we don't have boron in the soil. Thankfully,
just think about the sugar and the yeast in the liquor. Certain liquors.
Oh gosh, yeah. So anyway, so let's just keep going with that. So the consciousness of this thing requires that it has more of itself and food, right? So it creates this field of need or want. It's wanting sugar, and it lets you know, because it's jacked into your nervous system. Do you see what I mean? Because these coral reefs are like, they're very long and thin, and they can stretch up and down your body. They're flexible. And they can hijack your nervous system by transmitting on the same frequency. It's like mini cab. You know when a cab driver, you goes past out, and you get this thing coming over your stereo. Well, that's what it's doing. That's what this creature is now doing to your body. And it's saying, I want more sugar. Give me more sugar. Wouldn't that donut be a nice idea? Because donuts, you see, contain everything that the lung wants. It contains more yeast, and it also contains more sugar. So that's perfect. Beer is great because it contains more yeast. Bread is great because it contains more yeast and a little bit of sugar. Sodas... are great because they contain loads of sugar. Pizza is great because it contains yeast. Are you getting me? All right, so all of these things you start craving. Now, there is a solution.
Barley broth?
One thing. Barley is good. It is good because it contains molybdenum. But what you want is boron. So barley is good. Eat barley to get molybdenum, right? But
actually, mate, I've got some barley broth here. I just made some last night, actually.
Good man, good stuff. So,
yeah, good for you.
Here's the next thing, boron, right? Boron comes in a great package. It's called borax. Borax is sodium tetrahydroborate. Sodium borate tetrahydrohydrate. Sodium tetraborate decahydrate. There we go.
There you go.
410.
410.
Yeah. Okay, so borax is a household chemical. It's mined in California and Turkey and in various other places, but mainly from there. and it's a naturally occurring lake bottom product.
And
what it is, all the minerals that you need. This particular trace mineral is a kind of binding mineral. Boron is something it binds. It helps things to bind, and it helps the calcium to bind into the bone again. It helps the magnesium and the calcium. So you need magnesium. You need all these things. You need bananas for potassium.
About vitamin D, JP?
You need chocolate. Chocolate. That's got magnesium. I'm talking elements at the moment. Minerals.
No, I've got Schuchler's tissue salts. They're good too.
Yep, because they give you the minerals. Anyhow, so, and not only that, it also helps to neutralize the acid in your body. And what
Which
that
is
means,
the key.
And what that right. means, yeah, this is the key, is the alkalinity thing. Because once you start alkalizing your own body, then your bones start saying, oh, thank God for that. You got the message. Can you stop now eating the sugar? And then get rid of this thing. Right? And luckily, borax is an antifungal, alkaline, trace element filled solution. I mean, it does everything. And all you need to do is have the tip of your finger wet and dipped into the thing and then dipped on your tongue and then drink something quick because it tastes horrible. But for that moment of horrid taste, so many things. It'll sort your bones out. It's bone food.
It's good for you.
It's good
for
you.
I'm marching down to the store this afternoon and getting some of that.
It will cost you next to nothing. All right?
Yes.
I paid £8 for a kilo.
I usually go to a mountain stream and eat the stuff in the, eat the greens that grow out of it.
Yeah, you could do that. But if you live in a town and there's no mountain stream available to you, borax, which is available very cheaply, and you see this stuff will it'll also kill the Nung. So let's go back to this creature, right? I call it the Nung because what it makes you want to do is. All right, let me introduce you to your Nung. Let me introduce you to your own personal Nung, right? Because it's there. All right, I want to say hello, everybody. Not just you, because we're listening to this. There's many listeners here. Some people know this rap and have been here. But I will introduce you all to your Nung. Okay, so imagine you're standing in front of an oven. It's a lovely oven. It's Saturday afternoon. And your wife, stroke mother, stroke daughter, stroke, or yourself, have, it's like, oh, sexist remark, anyway, I think I got away with it. You've baked a loaf of bread, right? You know it's in the oven, and it's just the right amount of time, it's just about done, almost done. And, so you're in front of the oven, can you smell it yet? Yeah. Okay. So you can smell this lovely warm moist smell, right? And there's this lovely malty kind of to it. Okay. So here's the thing. Okay. Standing in front of the oven, let's just now move forward in time. You open the oven door. You get your oven glove. You take out the loaf. You put it on top of the oven or wherever you put it on this is the cooling rack. You open it and you put it down onto the cooling tray. And then you wait. And all the time you're waiting, you can smell this loaf. Steaming. Soft. Warm. Warm. Very warm. Moist. Soft. Warm. Moist. Okay? Malty smell. Okay? Now, I don't know whose mouth is not watering, but if you are there, you must be completely immune to this. You eat broccoli a lot. If anybody's mouth is watering, all right, just reach into that feeling. Just reach into that. Take a deep breath in through your nose. Just reach into that feeling of wanting to take that loaf out of the tray, waiting for it to cool down enough so you can get that knife, take a big slice of that, nice big fat slice of it, you know, get the butter. Hopefully the butter's been in the room warming up with the oven so that the butter's not too
soft butter, right?
Nice and soft, big fat knife. big dollop of, yeah. And then what you really want to do, you don't really want to eat the crust. I mean, let's just be honest, everybody. Let's be honest, in the heart of hearts, you don't want the crust. You actually want to cut the crust off. All right, so now you're left with this soft, warm, moist, yeasty, buttery, drippy. And what do you want to do with it? You just want to stuff it in your mouth and go, nung, 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 nung.
Gorgeous.
Are you with me, Harry?
Yes.
Do you know what I mean, Harry? So, all right, so, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, that is your nung. If you related to that little story at all, that is your nung. Now, now we've contacted it, you have to realize that it's a part of you. And you don't really want to kill it as such. You want to kind of pen it. Imagine it's a bit like a beagle. If anybody's ever had a beagle or a little dog, you know, it's everywhere and its little tail is wagging and it's so happy to be alive. And you're eating your sandwich and you're dropping crumbs and it's wagging its tail and it's snuffling it up. it's that sort of thing. It's got that sort of consciousness.
The peptides
food.
You're talking about.
The what?
Peptides.
The peptides. Well, this is the nung. This is the yeast. This is the being that is like overlaying your being. It's like inside your skin. It's around you, but it's not outside of you, if you see what I mean.
Mm. It's
the dough.
It's a doughboy. And if you're at all what people call overweight, you're not fat. It's nung. And if you stop eating, here's the thing. If you start taking borax, and then you'll then stop wanting so much sugar. And when you stop eating sugar, this thing starts to die off, and you feel bad for a while. And that's the point where most people give up because they think, "Oh, I'm feeling terrible. I just need to give myself a little treat. Oh, just one little treat, just one little thing." Because that's the nung. That is the nung pleading with you. It's pleading with you. It's like a little, "Oh, come on, no, you don't want to do that to me. Please, no, 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 no. You will kill me, you will kill me, you will kill me." You know, that's what it's saying to you. And it's really, it's a nasty little parasite that has hijacked your body almost probably since the day you were born because it came through your parents and it carries your parents' emotional patterns. And so, and here's a byproduct of this, when you start, you basically go through your stuff. You basically start releasing your traumas and body stuff, because that's where it's held. And it's not held inside you, it's in the consciousness of the nung.
Yes.
Because it traps it in feelings. You see, the nung only feels feelings. Go ahead.
It's your blob.
Mm-hmm.
It's your what? Sorry, I missed that, Rob.
It's your blob. It's your goo. It's your nung.
Yeah. Everybody's got their own personal nung.
Mm-hmm.
Nung must.
Well stated, JP. Well stated. What do you think, Harry? I mean,
yeah, it's an apt description of the overlay of consciousness that we all have been conditioned to. And it is right. We do need to get everyone needs to get healthy. Remain healthy, clear. And almost like a what do you call those things? Like a martial artist or a yoga, guru, whatever you want to call them. To that degree of honoring ourselves and our bodies,
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, in awareness. How about in awareness? And we choose our choice whether or not we want to feed that or not. It's our choice.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been bunging in the nunging for quite some time, and certainly the last December before Christmas, I made a decision because of this year in preparation for it and everything that's happening to go to the gym, and I've been walking, I've been exercising like a madman, and my little tripulator legs have got so red raw that I'm bleeding between them, they rub and stuff like that. But I've just got bandages and just bandaged it up, and I just got some infills.
Talcum powder, brother. Talcum powder.
we all have an awareness.
That's how ladies do it. It's telcompatible.
Sometimes slips, right, JP? Sometimes the holidays let us teases our nung a little bit, right?
So, well, yeah, of course. You know, we've forced it. It's forced down our throat. Here's the thing. Here's the thing. And it's something that I realized a couple of years ago. Well, not a couple of years ago, a few months ago, actually. The whole Passover. You know the Passover ceremony of the Hebrews, and you once a year you stop eating yeast. Huh? It's a yeast fast, folks. That's what Passover is. You know, and kosher means it's not got yeast in it. So they're onto something. And because I believe that yeast was given to the people in Egypt, and people became addicted to it. You know, because people are addicted to bread and addicted to beer. Most people who drink beer, you know, can't drink one. They have to drink many. You know, very few people can give or can take and leave it.
Yeah, being able to say no, just one. Yeah. Right, that's not easy. You know, come on in, let's just have one.
Yeah,
right.
Because again, this is nung consciousness. Mm-hmm. Because the consciousness of the nung is food and friends. So if you got food and you got let's bring my friends in, let's go out and all go together and drink beer.
And there's comfort there,
yeah.
Right? There's like it's like a what is that? The little warm little thing you put on your belly, that little warm comfort. What is that? The little,
wasn't the ale created in the UK so they could drink the water?
The what?
Or was that just in the UK? The reason that they created ale in the first place was because they needed to treat the water.
Oh, I see.
Because swamp water or something. That's
it. It was the cleanest water that people could get. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, nothing changes, does it? Nothing changes. You either drink water that's infested, or you drink water that's infected. God's sake, they don't treat us at all well here on this farm.
No.
So is it time for the farm to change ownership, to change direction, to change management, or should we just disband the farm and have everybody's a free range, and sort of forget about being a cattle, and become a bloody human.
Yeah. Well, I think I've got a book here. I'm just starting to read. It's called The Politics and Opinions of the 19th Century, written by John Bowl in the 1954s, and he talks about how we came as a cosmopolitan from the serf era of feudal land ownership and things like that. And we've always had that serf type of treatment from the elite. However, with the industrial expansion and industrial revolution, everyone started getting everything that everyone else could get. And, eating habits changed and way of life changed. And now we're more cosmopolitan type of civilization across the world, apart from obviously third world countries and fourth world regions and whatever. But point being is we are realizing that even though our sovereignty as human beings is just as level shouldered as the aristocracy or the people who govern, because they're just people like us, they have this sense of entitlement. And we now realizing that we also have a sense of entitlement, and we, as a populace, as an expanse of people across the globe, will have to work it out for ourselves on how we're going to manage this very small group of people who have been running the world for the last several thousand years or whatever it's been.
Well, time for a change.
Time for change, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's... I've been... I don't get much time to myself, but when I do, I like to sometimes relax with the sci-fi because it kind of draws my head together. And so I've been revisiting some of the old Babylon 5 episodes, which are brilliant. And of course, tell a lot more. I realize a lot more now than I did then about what was going on. It's really good actually to watch the X-Files movie once again now, after 20 years on. It's all about the black goo. It all makes sense now. It's all about the artificial intelligence invasion.
There we go.
Alien invasion. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're joined. Hey, somebody cares enough to call in. Area code 404. Maybe not.
The black goo.
Maybe they called into the wrong... they want to talk about the Oregon thing.
Yeah.
But
you're talking about the black goo. You know what the white goo is?
The white goo. The second coming of the Lord. No.
No. Google.
Google. Ah, the white goo. Yes.
Ooh.
The white and blue goo. So yeah. So Harry, what was your moment of choice? What was your moment of change that turns you from a regular bloke into a trooper, or whatever you might call yourself?
Well, I don't call myself a trooper. I'll probably toothler, because actually I've got to get them replaced. I got hit in the mouth with a sledgehammer about 30 years ago, so I finally claimed a workers' comp and I'm getting them done. So I found that out before Christmas. So I was singing at Christmas, all I want for Christmas is be two front teeth, and now I'm getting them. So there you go.
Oh, but, yeah, excellent. That's well done for manifesting that.
Yes. But I think it started with growing up with amazing parents who left the UK when I was 3. We travelled all around Australia and New Zealand. I've been to 33 different schools. So I've had a completely different paradigm or experience of life to a lot of people who've grown up in a certain town and got mates and, you know, got married and all those sort of things, you know, that people normally do. So that, for a start, was an edge that allowed me to think constructively or creatively or differently, because I saw, by coming into towns all the time, you start to see the pattern and behaviours that are similar, because you're seeing the same sort of things going on in each community when you come into it as a child. So what really changed my heart or made me passionate about something was when I was living in a place in New Zealand on the South Island called Geraldine, which is an idyllic little town. Had a mountain or a mount, a river, a forest, lyre birds, swamp lands and ice. You know, you could skate on the ice in the swamp in wintertime, and trout as big as my arm, you know. And I was 9 years old, and I heard about the Amazon rainforest and what man was doing. This is back in the 70s. Was doing, you know, just ripping it up and destroying the whole, bioculture of, that of the jungle. And because I lived in a beautiful place in the forest, and which I used to visit a lot on my own, that really made me think, how stupid is man? What on earth is going on? And so I made a promise to the trees back then that I was to try and honour them, and it sounded ridiculous, I know, but that's what I did. I was only a kid.
No, it's fine. It's fine. Everything is alive. I'm, you know, hylozoological, which means that everything is alive.
Yeah, everything is living. Yeah, even rocks sing praises to God. Apparently,
totally. So, yeah.
And this is part of even that thing that I read in the Bible, which is lots of things I've read in the Bible and other books, because my parents not only travelled extensively, they investigated religions extensively as well. We used to go to people's places, and they were Baha'is, Mormons, Seventh-day Adventists, looked at everything, you know, Hare Krishnas, I've done lots of things before.
Sounds like my marriage. My wife was the same. She was into everything. She's had more religions than most people have had cars.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's a 6-3 energy, that is.
Yeah. So it's been a glorious upbringing. Let's put it that way. A wonderful, very privileged, and a lot of fun, laughs, always fun. You know, I was never. But unfortunately, I found out later on in life, the people I talked to and met, that it was very privileged. I thought it was just normal, you know, because a lot of people tell me their sad stories about being abused when they're kids and all sorts of things. You know, it's like shocking. But anyway, so in Mount Isa in 1985, that's where I got my teeth knocked out, by the way. I lived in a mining town in the desert in Queensland, and I was an apprentice fitter and turner, and what I observed, in fact, I spent my whole youth there, and it was a pretty wild town. There's a lot of racial tension with Aboriginals and white people because it's a mining town, and they're basically a mining conglomerate. You know, the Rothschilds go in there and set up a mining enterprise in the 1920s and kill, you know, there's a big war with the local Kalkadoons and, you know, the Aborigines, and big battle ensued, and anyway. But so there's all that ongoing tension. Plus, you've got people from all around the world. I don't know if anyone's lived in a mining town, but when you live in a mining town like that, you've got people who are miners from all around the world come to that. So it's a very multicultural and great place socially as well. But there's also that den of iniquity, because where there's lots of money, there's drugs and, you know, all sorts of crimes and wild people, and it being in the desert in the sun, it has got up to 50 degrees there, Celsius. So it fries people's brains if you're not careful, you know, if you're mad and drink a lot or whatever. But anyway, so there I sat watching a sunset, and I said to God, I said, look, what the hell is going on in this place? You know, the rape of the earth causes all this disparity, this redneck mentality towards the planet. And people revel in it, you know, nut jobs. It's just crazy. And what came to me was to remember the pyramids, remember the ancient wonders, look into that sort of stuff. So that sent me on a trail eventually to Tasmania, because Tasmania is meant to be the green state, herald in around the world. Well, it's really not. It's just a very lush place, but controlled by corporations and families like everywhere else. But I went on this trek to discover the significance of the pyramids. And, of course, as I said before, even rocks sing praises to God. So, and pyramids are made out of, you know, stone. And then when I looked into it further, all the different places and ancient aliens, even though I don't agree with all their theories, the visual imagery that portrayed and all the sites that they visited allowed me to gain a lot of personal insight and information into all of that as well, to try and comprehend where we've come from or where we're going to. Because I think about it this way, if there was a bunch of fellas and ladies on the planet at that time realizing the fullness and completeness of cycles of cosmic things like planets and stars, and they wanted to leave some sort of thing that probably wouldn't change so much over the periods of time, you'd encrypt it in stone, you'd put it in a place that would not alter much, that people could draw upon later on in life, and now, or later on, you know, in the generations. And now this is where we're at. And to me, how it envelops, or how we rejig that consciousness from the promise of the trees that I had when I was 9, is that we utilize the technology that we have to enhance the environment, not destroy it. And I'm not talking about controlling us as a species. I'm talking about building megalithic size walls of all the different gemstones that portray in the atomic structure, density, and capitulation of resonance to a zero point. So basically build huge citadels with these walls of different gemstones and crystals coming to, opening up to the, let's say, the Holy of Holies, the points around the planet, where the crossing of the ley lines are, to allow hydrogen energy as an open source tower, snake, spiral, whatever you want to call it, vortex going up, disappears up into the atmosphere, like Jack and the Beanstalk type of thing, and probably forms up at the Van Allen belts to form this womb, which is what's called in Genesis the firmament. And this is what creates the replication of a density on the planet that allows us to shape and move rock butter.
Harry, did you just say worm? When you said worm, you made me think of wormwood.
No, he said womb.
Oh, okay.
As in womb at the top. No, as in uterus. So
we become a star, basically. We use technology to create a star. And like they say that, you know, some people say, or some beliefs say, that the ancestors are in the stars, and that the sun, within the sun, is a planet where people actually live or come from. People cry, comes from the sun.
Yeah, because the sun's cold, isn't it?
Yeah.
The sun's not hot.
Well, I see the outer layer as a shield.
Yeah, well, look, here's the thing. Let me just prove it to you, right? The sun is not
What's
hot.
What's the thing, JP?
Go
What's
up a hill.
Thing,
Go up a hill. Is it warmer or colder? Go up a mountain. Is it cold at the top or is it warm at the top? Go up in an aeroplane. Is it cold up there or is it warm up there? Go up into space. Is it cold up there? Is it warm up there? At what point does it start getting hot? Only when you're down on the ground.
Mm.
So, the sun is not hot. The sun is cold. It gives out a lot of light, a lot of X-rays, but not much infrared. Quite a lot of it ultraviolet.
Yeah, not so much the crosswire is the reaction of the rays at the Earth level then.
Yeah. So the thing is that when Nibiru comes around, that's hot. Whatever it's called, wormwood, that's hot. That is a red hot lump of iron that is highly magnetized as a north pole. It's like a magnet that's like a single pole, and it's stronger than you could ever imagine.
And it's slapping sun.
Yeah, and it's you see, it's not giving out X-rays like our sun. It's just hot. It's like, you know, it's like, to me, when I saw it, it looked like in a kebab house. You know when they have a shish kebab? Is it a doner kebab? The big one that they slice. Anyway, there's these grills that it sits next to, and it's a kind of orangey-red color. Really hot. And if, you know, you can, even if you're standing on the other side of the shop, and you can see this thing, you can feel the radiation from it, you can feel it on your face, right? That's hot, right? And that's what hot is, and that's red hot. And that's what the dark star is. It's just red hot, which means you can't really see it until it's right on you. And so we've got a hot sun and a dark sun, We've got a hot sun and a cold sun, and we've got a light sun and a dark sun.
JP, now what do we have? We got this thing they call Planet Nine. What is this Planet Nine they discovered?
This is something outside of... I think they're trying to prepare us for this thing. You know, we've all got different names for it, and that's part of the psyop of it. I mean,
it's a program.
Yeah, we could call it Nibiru, and then somebody will say, "Oh, Nibiru got destroyed," such and such. So we have no name. I call it Dark Star or Brown Dwarf. Actually, I had a dream a few years ago, and in this dream...
I had a dream,
brothers and sisters, where hand in hand, stars fall out of the sky. Now, what happened is, I was in a dream, and I was looking up at the sky, and suddenly the sun just like, you know, that quick, dropped out of the sky, and it went dark. And I thought, and in my head, I heard brown dwarf. And I thought, aha, that's what it is. Because, right, here's the thing. It's magnetic, right? Earth has got a magnetic pole as well as a geographic pole. If this very large magnet comes past us very quickly, it will schlep us out of our place. It'll
schlep.
Schlep.
It's going to schlep us.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's, yeah.
It's a good term.
Drag. It's going to drag us. Schlep is a good word. Anyway, it's
what about the tail? The tail.
Well, that's the second punch. But let's wait. Let's just get the first punch over with, right? So what happens?
On through.
Okay. Apparently, according to all the things, it's going to come on top of us, but it's going to come from the direction that the sun is. You know, that's how long it's going to take, right? So. As it goes, as it is approaching our position, it's a north pole, right? I'm just presuming it's a monopole north pole. This is what I've been told. It's a monopole north pole. North, it's like a magnet, so the north pole of a magnet will attract the south pole of another magnet, right? Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You get that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah. As this thing comes over the top of us, the North Pole, that is, will attract our South Pole, and as it passes over, it'll drag the our planet out of its normal orientation. And first of all, that will happen. The sun will drop out of the sky as it goes past, and it could take a few days. And I believe that that's what they call the 3 days of darkness, because that means that if it's pulled us out of our orbit. It'll certainly pull us out of our orbit a bit. You know, the year will change number. You know, we'll get a different number of days per year. We'll get a different number of rotations per day. Won't be long. Stay tuned.
Well, I think people have wolf spirit too.
Good evening. It's 5. No, isn't it 6 PST? That means it's 9 Eastern. And it's, it's 2 a.m. here in the UK. Nightbirds. Anyway, here we are. So, we were just talking earlier, and then Harry dropped his website in there. And there he is on the front cover. He's got a picture that is one of these things of my I've got strange ideas, but I believe that, you know, humans just don't come into one size. There it depicts in a very beautiful frieze with great detail of human-sized men and a bloody great big bloke who's got a long, scruffy beard and very Afro-looking hair, I have to say. You know, he's got a long stick and stuff. But I mean, you know, looking at him, from his foot to his knee is about the same as from our foot to our hip. That's how much taller he is than us. So I'd say that's about 9 to 12 feet. So. Do you want to talk about that picture, Harry? You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, that's... it comes from... Is it the Anunnaki? Well, in Babylon. But what I'm basically pointing to is... And you notice the little things in the background. They look like some sort of transformer type of devices.
Well, I was thinking they A, look like magic mushrooms with a little collar, but yes, indeed, they could well be Tesla towers of some kind of discharge there going on.
Yeah, and you notice the chair and the arrays on the carvings on the chair as well. But, you know, the... but what?
Well, he's insulated.
Yes.
That's what it is. That's insulation. Because, look, he's standing on a footstool, and he's got a chair, and the only thing that connects him to the ground is that rod.
Hmm.
Which is interesting, because apparently these guys had a lot of body charge. And one of the reasons that we can't operate their machinery, you know, somebody's got a beep that sounds like an aeroplane. Could you fasten your safety belt, please, or something? I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's you or Rob, but you got this. It's very soft.
It's probably something going off in the background here. I'll try and get rid of it.
It's a chat room, I think. It's probably a chat room or some kind of messaging system. So, where was I? Oh, yeah. So, grounding. One of the things that about the Anunnaki, or whatever you might call them, you know, the Titans or the big badass fake gods, as some people might want to call them, is that they had an enormous amount of body electricity. And so these ancient artifacts that they find are like, not only are they like too big for a human hand, is that in order for them to work, they need a certain amount of current in their body. You need a certain amount of chi. And because of our DNA mismanagement, we are kind of smaller than we should be, and we're also less full of current than we should be. That's one of the things. So that makes sense that he's sitting on an insulated chair. And indeed, there's a big kind of square box underneath him, that is also in the insulated part. So it could well be that he's in some sort of anti-gravity situation, or a gravity generator underneath him, or something like that. Do you have any idea?
He's basically sitting on the Montauk chair, you know. Let's look at things that way, because what I'm seeing was we're coming full circle as far as we as human beings... because we have that splicing of that DNA, or what do you want to call it, or consciousness, like the children of these beings who are coming into maturity. And when we come into maturity, we look at being responsible for taking care of what has been created rather than destroying it. These things will be genetically spliced or cloned or whatever, because this is all part of the humanoid type of experience across the cosmos. And so we're fighting like little children. But when we stop fighting and we start putting our heads together, we really have the technology. It's just a matter of applying it in a way that's cohesive to support the environment. And these sort of rulers that staff that he's holding, is the point that I'm trying to make, is with flutes or pipes, we can weave together or manifest matter. And it'll appear, we can make them appear as it becomes like a conductive intent rod, where you can point it at something and you can either laser it or part the waters or do whatever your intent of the holder is doing, holding it with, because it feeds off the imagination, or the third eye, or the fourth eye, whatever you want to call it, of the person holding the rod. I mean, this sounds like sci-fi and stuff, like a magic wand, basically. But we have the technology to do that now, because if you try and... I'm not saying I've seen that technology. What I'm saying is we have the ability to implement the technology in that way, because if you hear from the information that I hear about Project Looking Glass and all the different psychic phenomenons and, you know, how everything's a fractal and blah, 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 and the military having smart bombs and, you know, being able to control things in a way, you know, it's just a matter of taking all those sort of little fiddly bits and putting it into a way that is constructive rather than destructive. And these, I see, are the just, the people who have a good temperance, who have no inclination to get angry or kill anybody, but have the responsibility to make sure that things do go according to the higher call rather than the base call of greed, lust, destroy, and whatever else goes on the planet.
Thanks. Area code 936, who's that and where are you at? Area code 936, you're on the air, Revolution Studio B. Have you had enough time to plug in your thing? No? You can unmute your microphone? No, that's not working. There, maybe you call back. There's a good thought. I think it's time to become proactive. I think it's time that the universe is actually listening to us for a change. It's a rare opportunity. It's like somehow the tumbler's turned around the other way and we're getting in. The diode is open. The gate is open. So it's a good time to ask. So what I'm first of all going to ask is anybody who's listening to this who has enjoyed this conversation so far, and also the thing that goes ping, if you haven't already, and presumably you have, and if you haven't already, drop a coin in the box at Revolution Radio, at freedomslips.com, that's freedom, S-L-I-P-S.com, or freedom's lips, as in the lips of freedom. So, we seem to have lost Rob from New Mexico. That's what the sound was. So, Harry, are you back with us?
Yes, I'm here. You know, it's my sound. I'm just frantically trying to find it here.
You've got I bet you've got loads and loads of tabs open, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. I've been doing a lot of research and I'm working on so many different tangents. Uh-huh. And, I'm sorry about that. What I'll do, I'll close them all down and revisit them at a later stage.
So here's the thing. All right, so you've done a bit of research. Okay, so you're familiar with Velikovsky?
No.
Right, okay, so one book you want to read is Worlds in Collision by Immanuel Velikovsky.
Yeah.
He was a scholar who discovered various interesting things about astronomical measurements. About 3,500 years ago. So that's a very interesting one to read.
I'm not going to bring up my website web pages again. So could you just type his name for me?
Yeah. Emmanuel. I mean it's I've probably got an ebook of it. Velikovsky. There we go. Immanuel Velikovsky. You can look it up. Velikosky. He was a contemporary of Einstein, and he was a scholar of ancient things. And he found out that there was a particular astronomical event 3,500 years ago that is similar to what I was talking about. Okay, so there we are. And so as this dwarf star is coming towards us, it's still beeping. It's the sound. It's the radar of the dwarf star. It's pinging. You know, it's getting more and closer. Anyway, so as the dwarf star gets closer and closer to us, eventually its magnetic north will pick up our rotating magnetic south pole, and also particularly like iron deposits on the Earth will also tend to pull it a little bit, and that's what's been happening for the last few years. Is that the rotation has been pulled slightly, so it's made the rotation of the Earth slightly eccentric and pulled north a little to south early, and I've certainly noticed it, that the sun rose and set in two different places on 2 days.
Wow!
because I live near the Arctic Circle here, 3 degrees away, so we really notice when the planet is shifting. This is probably why I've been stationed here. Anyway, so so from what I understand, what I believe is going to happen. This is my, you know, I don't know if it's a belief system. I got lots of belief systems. One of my belief systems is that the Earth is an expanding sphere. Another belief system I have is that the Earth used to rotate in the opposite direction. These are not singular beliefs, because there's lots of other people who believe this and sort of all throughout history have. One of my corroborations of that is that ancient languages go from right to left, and modern languages go from left to right, which follow the sun as it would have. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So the Hopi say that when the red Kachina returns, it will set the Earth in its correct spin. Which, number one, implies that the Earth has changed its spin. Number two, that the Earth is spinning backwards. Which might result in the idea that the zodiac will eventually go round the other way. Yeah? And the procession... No, it won't. Or it will in the day. It'll just be... There will be counter-rotation in it, which will be generative, because we know that counter-rotating things generate energy. Ah, there you are, Rob. He's back. So where am I? I'm spinning out of orbit.
You're spinning, my friend.
I'm being dragged. I'm being dragged by the dwarf star.
Hey, I can throw something out there that Harry mentioned earlier. Harry, do you recall mentioning the term there, Van Allen belt?
Is there a buckle?
is there a buckle? You know, and have any of us traveled through it physically? No. So all we know is maybe what someone else has possibly traveled through it, right? I mean, do we know, or is it speculation? You know, where are we with the Van Allen belt, Harry? What do you think, JP?
Well, I think the Nazis did it in 1946. They've gotten onto the moon, and they sent us back. It's just the show. Anyway, I think it's possible to travel through the radiation belts. I think there is technology that can confer shielding on it. I think there are ships that travel through it without any problem at all. And I think these are all straw men. You know, these ideas. It's the same thing as this whole thing in Oregon. I tell you what the straw man is, whether he had a big gun or a little gun. That's the straw man. Oh, people are killing each other over it. Stupid.
It's unfortunate. I was just watching a documentary on the Rothschilds. Some really good ones, actually. If you look on YouTube and type in Rothschild documentary, there's a really concise historical explanation of how the money trail, basically, and how one country is played off against another just by a family, you know, and how they may not make a lot of money from it. So this whole paradigm, as I said on a previous show today, is until we people realize that we need to create our own money and start to implement things that people want to get done, rather than what we're told by the corporate or corporal laws, who are just a group of families who have the print the money.
Let's just clarify things. So just a little, just to make things a little more clarified, right? It's mafia. That's it. It's a Ponzi scheme run by the mafia. And it's just got a face on it. It's a facade, right? Because the mafia took it over. And so it's a, nowadays it's a Ponzi scheme. But really, it's always been the mafia. Because it's always come from the Romans. It comes all the way back.
Said Rothschilds, JP.
Yeah, I know, but the Rothschilds are the Romans.
That candy, right? That sugar candy, the Rothschild candy?
Rothschild candy.
I'm talking about the modern situation is still now is controlled by the Rothschild. Yeah, divide and conquer has always been the strategy. And in fact, one feudal, landholder against another feudal landholder, or you go, one chieftain against another chieftain, tribes and stuff like that. So we've always had that, because it's about control of resources and making a state safe for its people who work the fields or milk the cows or do whatever, people do to contribute to the community or society. But it's gotten to a point now where this global thing is what is being contributed to society. And what are the objectives that are important for the people who enforce the laws? And you're going to see that the laws make no sense to common folk, because they're not about things that matter. They're about things about controlling the resources.
All right, here's the thing. Again, there are important distinctions. There's a very important distinction between what is a law and what is a statute. There are only a few laws. Don't kill people. Number one, don't steal things. Those are laws, right? Those are natural laws. As, in every country, you'd call it common law or the law of the land or this or that. But then there's this other thing, which is what's known as statute law, which is, just because I feel like it. And that's what they're trying to impose on us. But it really only applies to the society in which those laws are enacted, i.e. the law society. They're the only ones who really should abide by those laws. Because they're not laws, they're statutes. You see? And people mistake lawmaking for statute making, and it's a big mistake. So once you realize that statute is connected with a state, and you don't have to be in a state. I don't want to be in a state. Who wants to be in a state? I'd rather be in a state of being.
Yeah, exactly.
So
than a state of confusion.
And here's the thing. Yeah, exactly. States of confusion, states of being. Here's one of the things that I've noticed. It's just like, hasn't anybody else noticed it? The only trouble in the world comes from the United States, the state of Israel, the Vatican State. Are we getting the idea here?
Those damn states.
The city states.
States.
What is
There's
a state?
There's a bad nung.
Yeah.
Bad nung.
It's a lump of nung, isn't it? The states, you see? And they say, set up a Palestinian state. No, we don't want a state. I think we should just forget about the whole state thing. I don't know. What is it? Communities, families, geographical locations. What's
it's
wrong with
states,
that?
Yeah, they want
there's
status.
Nothing that's better about or worse about one, apart from if one's down the bottom of the hill and the other one's chucking crap down from the top, in which case it needs to take responsibility for it. The whole planet becomes a naturally self-sustaining ecosystem, and it's nothing to do with anybody any further away than you can walk. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, why do we have to bother with international affairs? And why should something in another country affect us? There's no reason. Because it's nothing to do with us, and we're just being used as lunch.
They want to control
it. Following the money trail. It's the money trail. You follow the money trail. It's the bearer bonds, where the land has been offered, bared up, as a insurance to get loans. And collateral. This is what it's...
Okay, so loans. Loans from whom? And this is, obviously the Rothschilds who have kind of invented money that makes them profit. So, why can't we use non-Rothschild money? Because that's what happened to JFK. This is the whole business, you know. And who are the Rothschilds? Well, they're the tools of the Vatican. Yeah, they're the tools.
You got to use our candy. Yeah, you can't have silver certificate candy. No, no,
that's right.
No.
Because if you make your own candy, we'll come along and kill you.
Yeah,
exactly.
And that's what, you know, every single group that's done it. And, you know, I'm going to include the Mormons in this. Because a little-known Mormon fact is that in the years when they were kind of all just kind of spiritual sort of cowboy hippies things, talking to angels and stuff, that they had this... they not only did they have plurality of marriage, but they also had the thing called the United Order. This is not what many people know. But basically it was a very successful... a collective scheme, money collective. They, you know, everybody worked for the collective, worked for the church, and the church looked after them, and everybody got looked after, and they were able to build buildings, and the church was the people, because the church means the circle.
You mean Jonathan Smith, the church?
The early Mormon church, before it was busted into by the government and basically turned into the Freemasons. But it's a long story. I've actually read the Book of Mormon. I was baptized by one in a river once. It was a long story. So that goes back to the wife. You know, I was just kind of schlepped. I was literally schlepped along behind her star, behind the dark star that was her changing religion. She's a Muslim now. I'm not kidding. Anyway,
my Islamic name is Hassan Ali Habibullah.
So, in the, where were we? Mormons, that's right. So, the Mormons had this thing, and it was called the United Order. All right? And it might be worthwhile investigating this, because in my opinion, and in the opinion of the elders themselves, that was what was the impetus. You know, they didn't really care how many wives you would have. They really didn't care. But as Sean says, if you messes with the dough, you guts to go. Because what happened is that they became very, very successful. Because if you don't pay money to anybody else, and you pay money to yourselves and your own friends, guess what happens? Yay! It's a party. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. It's a growth economy.
Yeah.
It's actually the ideal economy, because it's a credit economy. Because you're friends, you offer each other credit.
Cronyism.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's, you could see it as cronyism, but if you're out in the Midwest and you're, you know, creating a small community, that's what you need. You need it to be successful, and everybody was successful and happy. And then the what they called the carpetbaggers came in and busted it all up, because they were, you know, people are not allowed to be successful unless they're part of the club. In which
those damn baggers of carpet.
Yeah, and that's why now the Mormons are all Freemasons, and they can only marry one woman, and they have to give their money to the church, which then pays taxes to the state.
To the church on time, David Bowie.
Exactly. Indeculable. So indeed, test for echo, Art Bell. You see, Art Bell. Don't get me started about Art Bell. Art Bell quit. Because the situation got too close to him. I want to give a shout out to Hawk. Hawk is right there in the middle of stuff. Go for it,
boy. He's getting in there, man. He rolls up his sleeves.
He's right in there.
Right on. So, yeah.
There we go. Big shout out to Nighthawk. I'm sure there's a special button for donating to the cause for the whole TV thing, but go check out the resources pages, the donate page on freedomslips.com if you are listening. Yeah. And if you're on a laptop or something, go there and click the PayPal button or the donate button, and or even buy something. I recommend the seeds at this time of year. There's lots of seeds and lots of good stuff you can grow.
Oh, it's always good to think ahead. Good to prepare.
Is there bumper stickers for the radio?
I would love a coffee cup, a bumper sticker, a baseball hat, and a t-shirt, a hoodie. I want a Revelation Radio hoodie.
What happened to bumpers here?
With a zip down the middle. I mean, just like that, there's a guy who's invented, he's made a hoodie, and he's got a brand on it, and he's like, oh, so successful, but it's a bloody hoodie with a zip.
You gotta be careful with hoodies in Florida, JP.
Yeah? Why? What happens in Florida when you got a hoodie?
Well, remember they had that problem with that shooting in the hoodies, you know, down in Florida?
There? Why not have a hoodie with a big target on the back? There's a good idea. with a big finger bird, you know.
I had one of those Vietnamese hats, you know, like the the ones made out of grass, you know, like the straight sort of down, round sort of circular looking pyramid thing on your head.
Uh-huh.
And what I did, just to keep the magpies away, I painted white, and then I got this red blood paint on it and splattered that at the top and stuck some of the feathers that I found on the ground. So it looked like I'd, spiked a bird. So stay away, in other words.
So, did that work?
Yeah, it did. It was good for a laugh anyway. You know, it's just something for a conversation piece.
Hey, in fact, I've got some reflection real quick here, if I may. Harry, you mentioned earlier that you were, you said around the age of 4, you and your family, you got to travel and you got to experience different countries and go through to New Zealand and different areas of the world. I mean, how great and how, you know, expansive that was, just for your consciousness, for your knowledge, for your appreciation, being able to, go into other religions, being able to, you know, touch other people, connect with, you know, with the world. How special is that to go out into the world and be able to do that? That's just really great, Harry.
It is. It is. I really thank God and my parents for it. You know, I've had a very privileged life, you know, because of they loved each other and they loved both me and my sister and, not in the Tasmanian way, but, you know, they loved us all the same and we lived a great life. We had a fantastic life. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, so thanks. Thanks, Rob. Yeah, it's it has been a really good upbringing. Not that anyone, you know, different to anybody else. I'm still, you know, we've all got our things we work through, but yeah, it has. It's many, 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 lived in a lot of wild, beautiful places. Isolated. I'm isolated, but I remember growing up, you know, living in these amazing places, you know. Another place on New Zealand's front was a place called Westport, which is on the South Island again. But you've got 30-foot waves hitting the beach, you know, from the roaring 40s or wherever the winds are coming across there. And huge, like, man-o-war jellyfish sort of floating out there past the wave, after the breaks, and, you know, and riding tractor tube tyres in on the waves, you know. And, you know, huge moray eels, swimming under the docks when you go fishing, you know. All sorts of things. You know, adventures you do as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Being able to connect with nature. You know, something special about that when it comes, you know, Fibonacci and just, you know, the energy, you know, like JP, you too, you know, what we were talking about before, young JP putting his hands in the dirt, right, playing with the soil.
Hey. I didn't do that sort of thing. I never touched soil. I lived in London.
How about the round sandbox? You guys, are you going to agree with me that if we're going to make a sandbox, it should be in the shape of a circle and not a square?
Oh, why?
Yes.
But you see, it's really, I mean, practically, it's easier to make a box. That's the thing.
Yes, it is. Right. And it's much easier to put children into an inoculation center like a public school, which is a box. But if you put them outside into a nature circle, that's a whole nother dimension, a whole nother vibration.
But you know what's really funny is kids love boxes like cats do. You know, my kids certainly did. Is, you know, because I used to make boxes. I used to make large size boxes. You know, and 3 foot by 4 foot, you know, that sort of size. And they used to love it because I used to, you know, make them, and they used to climb inside them and play with them. So I basically made a whole lot. Yeah, and had a studio full of very large boxes that could be easily moved around and stacked and put on top of each other. And I had to leave the studio after a while, but they're still in use at the local Steiner School, and they use them in plays. Actually, my girlfriend, she would stand on them to paint the ceiling. So they're still in use. I mean, it's great that they're all still in use. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Is it 16 years ago now? And they just made it the cheapest wood.
What does
it
call it? Geometric appreciation?
Well, they were all based on a 1 foot square, 1 foot cube, you know, so they were, you know, exactly 2 foot by 3 foot by 1 foot, or 2 foot by 2 foot by 2 foot, or things like that. They were exactly foot size. And so they would all fit together like Lego.
Mm.
And so, you know,
the Lego movie. Well, wait a second.
And it was great. So, you know, if we needed a stage, we would lay them down. But if we needed shelves, we'd stand them up. Or if we needed to, you know, create a grandstand, we'd lay one down, stand one up.
Well, I suppose you couldn't do that with circles.
That would be trickier with circles, and they're harder to stack and store and things like that. Hexagons.
But they do it with cheese. Circle cheese.
There's always a hole. Unless you got hexagons. Hexagons are brilliant. Hexagons like squares. Triangles would be a little tricky because they wouldn't fit in the corner of a room, whereas a square and a hexagon, that might kind of polish up. But, hexagons might work. Still,
about a decagon or an octagon?
Yeah, the octagons would work as well. Octagons and cubes would work quite nicely.
Or a dodecahedron?
You're just trying to be clever now. How many sizes has got a dodecahedron?
62? But you're thinking the box is good.
Yeah.
You can stack the box. You go in the box, you come out the box.
Boxes are much easier to make. They're so easy to make a box, right?
Remember when you go to the big box store and your mom would say, okay, go ahead and pick out one box of cereal. Remember that?
No.
No?
No.
Mary, did you get to pick out a box of cereal? I got to pick out one box of cereal.
Did you? Is that the only summer treat that you got?
Well, you know.
You know, some people have had a hard life, you know, Harry. Some people have had poverty in their life, and they've not even been able to have more than one box. I remember my mom used to buy a packet of boxes, variety.
It was a rectangle. It was a two-dimensional, it was a three-dimensional rectangle.
Yeah.
The cereal.
It was like the monolith. It was like the monolith in 2001.
Ah, there we go. Yeah. See, it all connects.
Yeah. Actually, do you know, did you, that's a great little thing. Great little meme, that.
Segway?
Yeah. The 2001, the monolith, it's 1x4x9. What's that?
We're talking about the da, da, da.
Fibonacci.
No, it's 1 squared by 2 squared by 3 squared.
Oh,
and it's like, oh, that's really simple. I see, and that's intelligence because it has added a layer of abstraction for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the squared.
There is the layer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the
fractal
layer. Once you understand that it takes intelligence to understand that it puts that layer in. It's not just 1x2x3, which could possibly be accidental or natural, but it's really making no mistake if it's 1 squared by 2 squared by 3 squared.
Stonehenge just popped up, JP, for some reason.
Here comes the conditioned man.
Monolith.
Turn off your radio, Mr. Brent, please.
Homestead, Florida, too.
I did.
Thank you, my friend. How are you, mate?
Hello.
Hello. Greetings.
Yes, greetings to fellow explorers, and philosophers, and cognitive geniuses, and interluders in space and time.
Members of the Journey's Continuum. Brent, how is the conditioning world?
I don't know. I haven't licked my finger and stuck it in the air recently. I was just calling for a couple questions from you gentlemen, for see if I could get some answers. Do you know where the North Star is?
Polaris, yes, in the tail of Ursa Minor.
If I walked outside, could I see the North Star?
Yes. Do you know what the plow or saucepan looks like? If you can find the
saw,
right? There's a constellation, a very large constellation in the sky, which is very visible, and it looks like a kind of saucepan. Depending on where it is in the sky, look, it could be a saucepan, or it could be a question mark, or it could be a hook, or imagine. But it's very large in the sky. It's known as the plow, or Ursa Major.
Oh, it's like a ladle.
Yeah, that's the one.
Polaris.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, there's a large and a minor.
Yeah, okay, so.
Oh.
So that's Ursa Major. Or the Great Bear, or the Saucepan, or the Plough. The Plough is actually, or the elephant, in fact. My girlfriend was saying, oh, it looks like an elephant. There you go.
The North Star, right?
No. We haven't got there yet. We're just finding, this is how to find the North Star. Because the North Star is in the middle of a kind of... What the heck's in there? All right.
We're getting closer.
But we're going to find it. Okay, so here we are.
This is good. We're getting closer.
There are three very famous constellations in the sky, in the northern sky, at least. One of them is called Orion, and is famous because it's got these three stars that are almost in a line, but one's just off to the left. Okay, and then that's surrounded by a big rectangle. Right, that's called Orion. Another one is called Cassiopeia, which looks like a W or an M or an Epsilon, depending on where you are on the planet, and or where you are in the season. And all of these stars, the Plough, the Cassiopeia, and Orion, they all encircle Polaris. Inside of those is the constellation Draco.
Hang on.
Inside of those is the constellation Draco. Home of Tubin, Alpha Draconis.
Fascinating.
Because Alpha Draconis is where these big Alpha Draconians come from, the reptilian types. Anyway, so Tubin is not very visible, but if you go... Right, so let's go back to the plough. Or the panhandle, the saucepan, or what did you call it, the ladle. And you look at the handle of the ladle, yeah? That consists of three stars, and they're in a sort of curve, you know, or a pyramid shape. So the peak of the pyramid, and then you just travel a little bit towards the center of this big circle, and that's where you'll find Thubin, or Alpha Draconis.
Alpha Draconis.
So, Alpha Draconis is the brightest star in the constellation of the Serpent, which circles right round Polaris. It's huge. Draconis is an enormous empire. Okay, so. Anyhow, so meanwhile, back at the plough. If you now look at the plough and you look at the bowl of the plough, so to speak, and you look at the two final stars in the bowl, and then you follow the line that those two stars make, you will then get to Polaris. There you go.
Oh, okay.
That's how you find Polaris. So you see that you're all in a ring, so that orients you, that that you see these three constellations all around you. Right, so that sort of gives you the idea of that's kind of north. You know, north is away from where the sun was. Sun is
so
always
it's easy. It's relatively easy to find the North Star following your prescribed measure from where you're at, right?
From where anybody is, unless you're not
from
on the Earth.
Where everybody is
on this planet, it works.
What about below the equator, near the Antarctic?
Then, of course, you will never see the North Star because you've got a planet in the way. You'll only see the south. Well, why does Southern Cross?
Why do the seamen? Why do the seamen say that they can see it from below the equator?
I never speak to seamen about North Star polarity below the equator.
They use it for navigating all around the world.
Well, is there an actual sailor who actually does this? Who actually sails all around the world?
Well, that's what I was hearing reports that.
Yeah, you're hearing that's the third.
Anybody on the Earth can see the North Star.
Well, maybe they can. I know that I can.
I know I can, but I'm not below the equator, so maybe we need to get somebody below the equator.
Yeah, I think we should, just to. Because I think that's just a flat Earth rumor. I think it's a psyop, and it's probably not real. But, I'm just going to stick my neck out there that says that's probably not real.
Somebody that lives below the... Who's with you today?
Harry. Harry.
Yeah.
Does he live below the equator?
Do you know what in the north...
Yeah, we've put the Southern Cross. I don't think we can see the North Star.
You can't see the North Star. You can't see the North Star from underneath the equator. That's just it. That's why it's the North Star and not the South Star. You know. Sorry.
See, he's telling you cannot see the North Star. Now, you need to know if you can see the North Star or not, because he believes the planet is in the way.
Yeah, no, Harry can't see the North Star. Harry, tell us.
Harry, you can't see the North Star, right?
We see a different part of the galaxy. Hang on. I'm going to go out and have a look at the stars tonight, and I'll tell you.
Take a look, Harry. Let us see the North Star, please.
Can you see? Have you ever seen the?
Is it clear out there where you are, Harry?
It is. It is pretty clear. I'm just going to head out of the city a little bit more, but it is. It is very clear. You get very clear skies. Oh.
Yeah, and you will find that in the Southern Hemisphere, you do not see the North Star. I'm sorry, that's a flat Earth myth, and it's a third-hand story, and it's not real. I mean, all respect, but that's not real.
JP, you guys see the Southern Cross?
I'm sorry?
Well, that's why I was wondering, told me that they could see the North Star from below the equator.
I don't see that to be possible. Wasn't the North Star used to guide certain people at a certain time? Wasn't that like fixed to be, Polaris? The North Star.
Everybody could see the North Star, in the known world at that time.
But now the Southern Hemisphere cannot, right?
All of a sudden you can't. So.
Well, it's because the known world was in the Northern Hemisphere, folks. That's why. Known to Western man.
Known to the
Americans
and
British.
The Aztecs and... No.
What about the tunnels underneath in Pangaea?
Oh, now you're talking a hollow and inner and Earth as a pudding with lots of holes in it. Earth as a large loaf that is expanding like a big nung. Great big
rotatable nung. I mean, it's not going to be solid if it spins, right? There's always going to be a pocket or two here or there, right?
There's all sorts of things that live in all sorts of places, and sometimes they're sealed off, but there's a whole ecosystem that's evolved in there. You never know. That life occurs everywhere. Just like
consciousness within all, right? Like within the rock, like Harry mentioned, right? Harry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So
you need to do is develop a machine where you can elevate yourself off the Earth and stay stationary in that place in space, and then the Earth will fly under you at 1,000 miles an hour, and then you come right back down wherever you want to go.
Isn't that the Red Bull guy?
Yeah, but the trouble is
the equator.
Trouble is you'd need to break the 1,000 miles an hour that you, because you're still spinning with the Earth. You'd need to break.
You have the Earth beneath you. You get up high enough so that you're, in the atmosphere, and I guess you'd
stay you're still
there.
If you go up, then your momentum is still pushing you forwards from the rotation of the planet. So if you go up, you'll go along as well.
Well, I know we need a machine that will counteract that, so that all we have to do is suspend ourselves at some point in space, right?
So what you want is a machine that actually generates a gravitational pressure that will push you away from the planet. Yeah?
Well,
if you took some you took some highly charged ferromagnetic fluid, right? Just imagine this.
Yeah,
you take some highly charged ferromagnetic fluid, and then you stuck it in a couple of cylinders, and you spun them very hard against each other. Something like that might happen.
Spacely.
Yeah, you might stand right there. Yeah.
And
cogs.
Zim, zim, zim.
Then the Earth would spin under you.
Exactly.
And you could just come down wherever you wanted to.
Exactly. So I believe that that's what happened at Keksberg, that they basically did that, and it did that also in time as well as space. And so 20 years was a matter of seconds. 20 years and some hundreds of miles, some thousands of miles.
It affected time.
They disappeared in Berlin. Or not in Berlin. It was in the Al Mountains. It was Castle Kizizians, the way it's now Poland. But they disappeared there and reappeared in Keksberg. And it was lucky, you know. It could have been in the middle of a mountain or something like that. And then it sort of slowly settled down to the earth. And that's what Keksberg was. It was Die Locke.
Yeah, thank you for the answers. Did Harry ever come back?
Harry?
Yeah.
No, I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I don't think we can see. I don't think we can see the Northern Star in the Southern Hemisphere because of this. It's definitely not there anyway.
Because it's in the north, and we're on a sphere.
Is it nighttime or daytime? Well, no, it would be. What time
at
is it?
It's 10 minutes to 2 in the afternoon.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of hard to see. Okay, thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks very much, Brent. Thanks for calling in.
Okay.
Namaste.
Bye.
Namaste. So, we
will... Namaste.
JP,
Prometheus. Hey, can we say hi to the people over at Wolf Spirit just real quick?
Yeah, real quick. Say hi.
Hello, Wolf Spirit people. Thanks for being here with us.
That's enough.
You too, as we do those at the Revolution Radio also. We must share, right? We share. Share is care, right? Oh. Share and we cannot dominate, control.
Yeah.
We must share.
Yeah. So, I've... Old Ones is going, I've finally found the solution. You know, I've always been moaning about the smoke and the wind and the smoke and the rain and everything.
You've been moaning?
I have been complaining for years, you know, that my house is full of smoke because the wind is blowing in the wrong direction. I tonight have found the thing that will prevent that from happening. It's an aerodynamic terracotta coloured enamel stove baked cowling which can handle wind from any direction without it blowing back. Special anti blowback feature. So I'm going to be happy. I'm going to have a great internet, and I'm going to have a great warm stove that's never going to blow back, and my girlfriend will be happy. And,
so what are you saying, JP? You're doing weather manipulation?
I am a weather god, but, you know, don't tell anyone. the next thing I want to do is wind generator. Because there's plenty of it. So why not scoop, you know, forget about solar, right? We don't do solar here. If we could get lunar energy, that would be great, because we got plenty of plenty of dark. You know, we get a lot of dark per square millimeter in Scotland. Really loads of it. In the winter. And in the summer, we get loads of light. Too much of it. It's just extreme. Anyway, that's what happens when you live at the pole of a sphere. We live on a sphere. I live at the pole. That's why it's different. Okay.
How about JP's moonlight generator, you know?
My moonlight generator.
Oh, JP.
Oh, that stranger on the shore. Oh, what? Sorry?
Have you heard of Findhorn in Scotland?
I live near Findhorn in Scotland.
Well, that's where he's at right now, Harry.
Oh, well, there you go. that I remember reading The Magic of Finhorn when I was a kid as well. Like one of the was one of the books that really impressed me.
Bing, home. Yes, we're near Finhorn.
Yeah, and you know, the gardens that produce and the other elementals that were contributed to the region or were in the region. I think this again. These are just thoughts that I've had over the years, but with the breaking down of the atmosphere, like if say supposedly that the Bible was right and there was a firmament in the outer realm, we'd have a different type of atmosphere on the planet in between that seal.
Hey, do you want to hear my theory on the firmament?
Yeah.
All right, this is my theory on the firmament. All right, so let's start with a few data points, okay? Mm. We have known that research with pyramids, over the many years, one of the things that there has been consistent and nobody really talks about it, but that if you put fruit or vegetables or stuff under pyramid, it kind of dries it out, dehydrates it, and preserves it.
Mm.
Nobody's ever thought, what's going on? Everybody's like, oh, yeah, it dries out. Okay, yeah, well, that's fine. That's a pyramid, yeah. But anyway, so we then take ourselves to Egypt. Now, do you want me to lay out what I've learned about the pyramid?
Mm-hmm.
Because I've got a few data points about it that maybe people haven't really connected the dots, but I'm going to connect the dots with wire. All right? Because the pyramid is a machine.
Mm.
Okay? It used to, and there are legends of it, it used to be wrapped in gold wire. And when I say wire, we're talking cable. We're talking great big thick. Imagine like 4 inches thick cable made of gold. Yeah? Great conductor, you know? And it wasn't such a big deal in those days. You know, gold was just this is like aluminium, you know?
Mm.
Like, you know, stuff, you know, like, whatever. Anyway, and so it had these two coils in it. And these coils were wound in opposite directions. And what that meant is that they, by adjusting the phase of the coils, you could steer the array of where the energy that these coils are. You know, you could manipulate the toroid that the field coil was creating.
Yep.
You with me? Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Okay. So now, inside the pyramid, and in the middle of the pyramid, in the two-thirds along the vertical axis, or one-third up, is the what's known as the King's Chamber. Okay, bollocks to that. Honestly, kings. All right, but anyway, they call it the King's Chamber. It's got what they call a sarcophagus. Bollocks to that. It's not a sarcophagus. Is that it? Is that it? Are we over? Oh, my God. Anyway, we'll talk about that some other time. It's great. All right, thank you very much, guys. That really whacked by. There we go. That was Journeys with JP. Thank you, everybody. That's all, folks.